The idea, as the title says, to constrain high-dimensional gravitational theories with causality. So let me state during my talk, let me motivate it and state the assumptions. So we will be talking about principles. It will be principles that we will be talking about gravitational theories. So gravity is always there. Another important thing is that we always assume that it's weakly coupled. So there will be no loops, in a sense, during this talk. Third thing is that we, of course, it will be important that we assume that we don't have general relativity, but we have higher derivative corrections to GR. Also, the discussion will be slightly different. Well, it is as usual. It is slightly different in three cases, which is a flat space, EDS, and DS. And I will be talking about flat space and EDS, and DS, which is, in view of recent discovery, is very interesting to talk about, of course, and especially in this context of also gravity waves. But I will not be talking about it today. So hopefully next time we'll discuss the theory space. So this will be the picture of what I'm talking about. Let me start with an example of what we would like to do. Let's say we have some gravitational theory. Let me write a five-dimensional one, which has the following type. So we have Einstein theory plus some corrections, which I put in quotes. Well, let me, for simplicity, assume it's say Gauss-Bonnet term. And well, of course, it can be any action with any type of corrections. But for simplicity, let's talk say about Gauss-Bonnet. And I wrote here five-dimensional case. Also, we can talk about general dimension. So what is the idea? The idea is to show, assuming that theory is weakly coupled, that Planck is very large, that this type of theories are not consistent if there are new degrees of freedom at the scale of the mass being 1 over alpha. So there has to be some new degrees of freedom. And if you add some higher derivative terms, in this theory, there is a problem unless there are new degrees of freedom at this scale. That's the idea. This is to show. That's what we would like to show. Of course, this type of problem is inspired by string theory, where R square corrections or higher derivative corrections appear at the string scale, where so alpha is equal to alpha prime, roughly. And the hope is that, of course, the grand dream is to show that whenever you have higher derivative corrections, you would like to prove that there is many new particles of higher spins. And to prove that the only theory is which a consistent theory will be string theory before cosmology rules it out, we have still some time. That's a goal. Now, you could say, okay, that this is some particular action. It's Gauss-Bonnet. It was studied a lot. It has very nice properties, and people study causality for this theory. But why do we care? Say, even in string theory, corrections take different form. So let me formulate it, the statement that I would like to prove in on-shell terms. And in the on-shell terms, the idea is the following. Say, even in this five-dimensional case, there are several types of three-point amplitudes of graviton. Say, let's three-point amplitudes or three-point function if we let space one. ADS, and in particular in this theory, there are two types of the amplitudes, and one is generated by GR, and it behaves like G times energy. I'm talking about three-point amplitudes here. And the one which comes from Gauss-Bonnet, it will behave like so that say the ratio is e square. And in generic theory, where we don't have an action, but we assume that we have only one graviton, we would like to constrain or relate three-point amplitudes, which are, as you know, in flat space and in ADS, they're fixed up to several numbers just by symmetries. So the idea is to relate these numbers, these three-point functions, to the gap. To the gap in the CFT or to some new particles or new scale in the theory, and to show that there is a problem unless there are no new particles. So this is a on-shell formulation of the problem, and it's completely independent of field redefinitions, perturbation theory, or whatever. And of course, as clear from my title, the way to attack this problem would be to use causality. And say for Gauss-Bonnet theories, there were many papers, people analyzed how causality constrains this type of theory by Robert Myers and collaborators and many other people. And so here we will go a bit further and consider the same type of problem, but in slightly different setup. So let me switch to sorry. I have to learn how to do it. So that's the goal. And if there are no questions, let me continue.
Yeah. Yeah, Steve said the R-squared terms go as Gauss-Bonnet, but the Gauss-Bonnet terms don't add the degrees of freedom, so I see any deviations from Gauss-Bonnet.
Sorry, say again.
The Gauss-Bonnet terms don't add the degrees.
Exactly. So the idea is that so if you look at the that's a whole point. So I assume that there is a graviton and nothing else. And then I would like to show that this theory is inconsistent by itself.
Okay.
For any, say, lambda, for any alpha. Before it was, there are some existing bounds on alpha. We would like to make it stronger. So indeed, there is a graviton and nothing else. So let me describe the causality setup. And first, well, it's very clean. It's very clean in ADS space, which has this Penrose diagram. And we have some light cone structure on the boundary. It's a light cone structure of the CFT. And if we have some state, we still would like to impose the conditions that for any state, so if we take a commutator of stress tensors, it is zero if stress tensors are space-like separated. So that's things that we would like to be true in CFT. For any states, it's an operator state, or operators commute outside the light cone. And then the idea is to take particular state, not, of course, ADS in such theory, and to study this commutator and see how it behaves, if it's well behaved. Of course, in flat space, here we have a very nice boundary structure, very robust light cone. In flat space, situation is more subtle. And here we would like to use, in a sense, the same ideas in ADS. So if we have some, if we take some spatial slice, and we have some state, some mass. We take some observers far away. And instead of thinking about the boundary on this, we think about observers which are far away. And we assume that they can synchronize the clock. And if they do this, if say we have some mass here, if we send a signal, there is this famous so-called Shapiro time delay. So if they will try to synchronize, if they assume that they live in Minkowski space, they will have an error in their time, which behaves like GMB, L, Z minus 4, L. And the idea is now to take D to, in flat space, we assume, let me assume for simplicity, and I will not discuss case D equal 4, because in D equal 4, we have a logarithm, but if D is larger than 4, then it goes down. And for large observers, we assume that they can synchronize the clock and compare the results of experiment to the ones they will have in Minkowski space. So let me comment a little bit here more about this. I think that there are, as far as I know here, there are related theorems in GR. In GR, there is this, as far as I know, the paper by Wolger and Wald and Gao, which shows that if you assume that you have null energy condition holds, then the fastest geodesic in ADS goes along the boundary. In flat space, there is this theorem by Penrose, Sorkin, and Wolger, which again exploits the same structure, that if you can define the causal structure far away from any mass, then this mass has to be positive. So there is this proof of positivity of the mass in GR using the ability to define causal structure far away. And the same also, so that's the intuition. We would like for our theory to be able to define the causal structure far away, at least in D larger than 4, and then compare signal propagation in Minkowski space and in some perturbed state, perturbed non-trivial state psi. So that's the idea. That's what we would like to for our theory to be. And of course, it's very clean. This is more or less the same, but a little bit subtle, and especially subtle in D equal 4. So that's how we would like to approach the problem. We assume for the null energy condition, we assume for the sources. This is I can add some source to this. And to this. No. Well, and also all this null energy condition theorem say about GR. I'm not talking about Gauss-Bonnet. As far as I know, I don't know. At least I don't know theorems about Gauss-Bonnet. All the theorems about null energy and blah 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 say all about GR. So there is this picture that attractive nature of gravity and the ability to define causal structure far away are tightly connected, and that's what we would like to use for the higher derivative corrections. Okay, so let me now specify some very simple state, very universal state in gravitational theories, and study what happens there. So, I want to discuss so-called shockwave geometry, and the idea is that there is this famous plane wave geometry.
The main point in this space. What was the purpose of this picture with these 4 points and this circle?
Yes.
Is there any connection to this equation?
Yes. Well, the idea is that I would like now to say that if I have observers far away that say synchronize the clock and they know how long it takes the signal to propagate in Minkowski space, now I consider perturbation around Minkowski space, and I would like to impose that what happens in this perturbed space, they cannot be time advanced, so I can always define a causal structure far away using Minkowski space, and that's what's happened here. So, well, if you wish, the bottom line is here. But just the really sharp statement from here is that I will be comparing time delay with Minkowski space. And now let me specify the state, and it's this famous shockwave or plane wave geometry, which is a gravitational field of a highly boosted particle. So if you take highly boosted particle, it generates the following very famous metric, which so u and v are light cone coordinates, and there is d minus 2 transverse dimensional plane, and there is perturbation of Minkowski space, which is given by this function h, And this function h, it satisfies Laplace equation in this transverse space. So it is fixed to be, well, and dependence on u is arbitrary, so we can pick it like delta of u, g, p, 1 over r, d minus 4. So again, let me emphasize what happens here. There is a Newton constant, there is a momentum of this highly boosted particle, and there is a decaying field in the transverse plane. As you go far away, well, strictly speaking, there is a source here, which is sourced by this boosted particle. So as far as you go far away from the source, the field decays. So let me let me say a couple of words about this. What's nice about this metric is that if you consider, well, this is a, of course, solution in GR, but also it's well known that this metric is an exact solution in any theory of gravity. If you add, if you write any action you want, you can see that because, well, this geometry, it has a nothing, metric does not depend on V. It has a covariately constant null killing vector, and you can show, well, that one, you can show that the consequence of this is that whatever corrections to the GR action you have, they will not contribute to the equation of motions. And if it was solution in a general relativity, it will be exact solution in any theory of gravity. So that's a universal background that we can always consider. Shut down all the fields, turn off all the fields, and consider this perturbation. And it will be always a solution. So let me now describe what happens to geodesics quickly in this geometry. And this is a transverse plane, which is d minus 2-dimensional, and this is u and v. So we have a particle which moves in v direction, which is very fast, and it has this delta function of u, and it sources a gravitational field in the transverse plane, which is centered at the position of the particle. Now, if we consider geodesics in this space-time, there are two effects. First, there is what I would like to call the time delay, delta v. And then there is a deflection. So when particle goes through the shock, it is attracted by the center. And the time delay is given by this formula, gp. And if say when we go through the shock, there is an impact parameter b, d minus 4. So this is a time delay, and you can see that if you have a particle with positive energy, it's positive. So if you have general relativity, then particles which are going through the shock, they're delayed. That's what well-known fact. Now let me think about the same computation. Yes, of course, the idea is that the second probe particle, and which I consider here, it's an analog of this commutator. So we pick up a state being a shock wave and consider a commutator as an ability to propagate signals through the bulk. So that it's the same as this computation of the commutator. Now, the second way to think about this is, of course, we can consider some the second way to think about this the same problem, and that will be useful later, is to consider the wave equation, which is something like Laplacian square phi of 0. And you can show that in a high energy limit, when say both particle is going through the shock, and the particle that creates the geometry are very energetic, then well, we can use the fact that the geometry has a scaling solution, and phi has derivative of phi is equal And the bottom line is that the solution of the wave equation reproduces the previous geodesic computation. And there is a time delay. Now, this fact that the wave equations, the geodesic computation, the two computation coincide is just it's true only in the simplest example. And if we consider any theory of higher derivative gravity, the basic fact about it is that if you try to send a signal through some non-trivial geometry, that if you have, say, geodesic which satisfies some equation like this, and that's what I was talking about then. And in a non-trivial background, in the higher derivative theory of gravity, there will be effective metric, which signal will fill. So if I send a wave packet, then these higher derivative terms, they effectively change the metric that is filled by the wave packet. And if theory is such that this metric leads to time advances, then we have a problem. So now let me consider the following problem. We have a Gauss-Bonnet theory, and we have this shock wave, which is an exact solution everywhere. And we would like to consider a propagation of a graviton in Gauss-Bonnet theory. And I will not make this computation here, but you can just find the equations for the perturbation. And the result is that instead of this equation for the perturbation with a simple time delay, it is slightly changed. And it's very easy to understand what is the qualitative difference. So it's we have some graviton field. And when it propagates through the shock, there is the same very term, which we have in GR. But in addition to this, we have a correction which has the following type. It, of course, depends on this Gauss-Bonnet coupling and divided by b square. And there is a constant which depends on, let me call it, helicity of the graviton. So recall that the symmetries of the problem are the following. If I have a shock wave and I have a center in this transverse plane, transverse plane is d minus two dimensional. And we pick up a vector in this d minus two dimensional plane. And so the residual symmetry is SO d minus three. And so in case of five dimension, it is just SO2. And this is a SO d minus three. It's a symmetry of the problem of the background. So if you have some graviton with a particular quantum number, it propagates just diagonally through the shock wave. And the result is that you have a universal shift of 1 over b squared times a Gauss-Bonnet coupling times a constant which depends on helicity. Now you see what happens is.
Sorry, is that
pH doing
the things, or you suppress the indices?
Yeah, suppress the indices, yes. What happens is that the fact is that this C of this constant here, which depends on helicity, it has both positive and negative sign. So let me just say C2 is positive, C1, 0 is negative. Now if you compute time delay from here, which has this form, delta V proportional 1 plus alpha of B squared times C helicity. And we impose the positivity of the time delay. Then we see that if we trust this computation to smaller and smaller betas, we are bounding alpha more and more. Because, well, we can have this both positive and negative number. And if we allowed ourselves to trust this computation for small betas, then this theory is ruled out for any alpha. And you see that the problem occurs exactly when B, the impact parameter, probes this parameter alpha, which is some new length scale in this theory. So that's in the spirit of string theory on this, the program of a problem we were looking for. whereas the problem appears at the exactly where we expect it to appear. So this argument, if you trust it, if there are no new particles, it bounds this alpha parameter of Gauss-Bonnet theory to zero and solves the problem for this particular setup also. Can I write here, or is it visible? Exactly. Now that's what I will we're aiming to, and let me discuss this. So this computation, as Zohar said, you can. Well, I did it in Gauss-Bonnet, so that where I think it's very clean, and now things very clearly it bounces this coefficient to zero. But now you can say, okay, I don't like Gauss-Bonnet theory. I want to do, say, string theory. And I want to do this so that it does not depend on this equation of motion, action, et cetera, et cetera. And so, of course, the idea is to relate this computation to the some process which involves scattering amplitudes, so things which make sense on shell. And that's what I would like to talk next. But here's the bottom line, is that if you consider any theory of gravity which leads you to the second order equations of motion, you'll have a time delay of this type, and you can, if you trust this computation, you can bound it, you can bound these parameters to zero. Moreover, let me also say make one comment here. If you have, say, this shock wave and this probe particle, and that's, let's say you have new particle in a game, so these two particles you're allowed to exchange this new particle, then the propagator for this new particle or this new particle generate your Kawa potential. So that you expect contribution of this type. And exactly that if you have a new particle of time of mass m, when b is of order 1 over m, you can hope that it will kick in and help and fix this. And that's what happens in string theory, for example. Yeah. Huh? Well, I think there is more. You can ask. Of course, you can ask what sharp can you say about this thing? Because there are different ways to fix it. You can imagine, I don't know, extra dimensions, quantum effects, classical effects, loops. So you have to assume something. So if you assume, if you assume that we are in a classical regime, like in a, say, weakly coupled string theory in flat space, then you can see that importantly, this new particle that appears, if it has, say, spin 0, 1, or even 2, it will not help you. Even finite number of, say, I think even finite number of any particles will not help you. So you really have to have something like an infinite number of higher spin, well, of all particles of all spin. So I think it's here what is important is that it's not maybe that you bound the mass, but what's important is that if you find this three-point function, if you expect the classical corrections, but this will be some new higher spin particles and something very stringy in a sense. Now let me, I would like, yeah. Which C? C here, it's a parameter which depends on dimensionality. It depends, it's complete, just a number. It's like D, so it does not depend on anything. You start with a theory which has one parameter alpha, you consider helicity to graviton, and you get the answer which depends only on alpha. So in this problem, we have only graviton and nothing else here. Yeah, so let me reformulate now this in terms of in the on-shell language. And the idea is that this is one of the cases where the processes that we are studying is dominated by a tree-level amplitude. And moreover, it's dominated by the pole of the tree-level amplitude, which is a pole in the T channel. More precisely, if you introduce, let me introduce just formally a phase shift as a 1 over S integral over transverse exchange momentum, which is, it's just Fourier transform, it's an amplitude and an impact parameter space of the tree level amplitude. You will see in all examples that an example of Gauss-Bonnet, example of scalar theory, for example, if you take the amplitude to be S square over T, you just see that you reproduce the shockwave computation and that the phase shift is GS or BD minus 4. So the claim here is it's very simple that in this shockwave computations are related to amplitudes in the impact parameter space. And of course, it was known in case of scalar amplitudes or whatever for a very long time that this is what is happening. And importantly, that if you look at this integral here, you see that we have a pole in this exchange momentum. And what this delta computes is it's effectively governed by the physics of the 1 over T pole. Now, this physics of a 1 over T pole, it is known to be governed by unitarity, by three-point amplitudes. Namely, if you take the limit of 0 T of the four-point amplitude, it is known to be governed by the just sum of the three-point amplitudes, and this is known by complex factorization. This paper by Philip Schuster and Natalia Toro. So in this setup, you can bootstrap the four-point amplitude, or you can bootstrap time delay from three-point amplitudes, because three-point amplitudes are just unknown up to several numbers. So now let me. That's how you can define abstractly time delay in a theory of in an abstract theory with given three-point amplitudes. And also notice that usually when people talk about three-point amplitudes, they are zero in the physical region, and you have to complexify momenta and go to some mixed signature space where they're non-zero. But this I think is a nice example where three-point amplitude is very physical. Because instead of going in a mixed signature, you go to impact parameter space, and impact parameter integral is doing this for you. So in three-point amplitude, they govern this time delay. In this way, we can write a formula for the time delay in an abstract theory of gravity was given three-point amplitudes. And the result is the following. That this phase shift is given by this GS sum over A3, where Q is substituted by just d beta. Over B to the D minus 4. Now, that's something that just follows from unitarity, and we can write a formula for abstract scattering. But in the connection to the shockwave computations, there is one more step, which Zohar mentioned that we have to consider high energy limit, so that if you really want to get this, notice that when we were solving this equation, we get exponentiation of this phase shift, and if we can consider just a small tree-level amplitudes, it's some small number. So how does the exponentiation work? What was the mechanism for this? And on the scattering amplitude side, what happens, this exponentiation is known under the name of Iconal limit. You consider a certain region in a S and B plane in the space of energies and impact parameters, such that you see that if you consider a set of diagrams, which has these horizontal letters, blah, blah, blah. And if you resum them, what this sum does for you, it just put this tree level into the exponent. So it's equal to. And it exponentiates in the impact parameter space. So this phase shift is governing the amplitude. Now, and indeed, that's what happens in all these shockwave examples, that on one side you have an iconal limit, on the other hand you have shockwave computations. But it is also well known, iconal limit is something very old, that this iconal limit, iconal approximation, first of all, we have some abstract theory of gravity, why does it work? And also it's known to break down in QCD or in scalar theories. But here, I think it's very important that one of my assumptions is that the theory is gravitational, because there is also, say, well, if we play this game in some gauge theory, there is this gluon is regiaizes. And this regiaization is governed by these vertical letters. Now, I think qualitatively, the issue of whether iconal or regiaization breaks down or not break down, it's not the theorem, but I think it's what happens in the examples. It's governed by the way how your coupling behaves in the S channel and in the T channel. So if your coupling, and if we consider high energy scattering, if your coupling in the S channel is much larger than in the T channel, then you're fine and iconal approximation works. And the crucial fact about gravity which allows this trick to work is the fact that the coupling grows with energy. So the fact that this coupling grows with energy makes you think that, okay, this game should be possible to always to play this. Moreover, of course, let me make some important things that I'm considering some shock wave, some probe approximation. And you can say, okay, if it's high energy process, we can form black holes. Yes, it's all true. But the point is that we can sit in the regime where black holes are not formed. And we have this exponentiation. In other words, also, I think another way to put this what is the role of this exponentiation? Okay, take some effect, say some small effect, and put it in the exponent. So you can really say that, okay, I'm in trouble because we have a time delay which can be microscopic. So the thing is that even if you don't want to talk about this exponentiation with diagrams, we can consider the following setup. Let's say we have an amplitude which is always small, it's never large. We don't have to resum the loops. But we repeat the process many times. So we have, say, graviton, which crosses many, many shocks. And in every small collision, the phase shift is small and negative, and we would like to accumulate it to become of order, say, of order one. And you can play this game, which does not depend on these diagrams. And if your interaction is weak and you separate this collision, the S matrix is like a product of S matrices for every collision. And you can study when you can exponentiate. And the conclusion is identical to what you will get if you don't consider this setup, but consider these diagrams, is that whenever the coupling in the S channel is growing with energy, you can accumulate this time advance effect. So that's why, for example, if you have repulsive particles, if you have electron and another electron, they repel, and if you do this kind of computation, you will get negative phase shift. But this negative phase shift, it does not lead to time advance. It's not a problem. So what's crucial about gravity is that the coupling grows with energy. It allows you to accumulate this phase and to really go into trouble. So let me finish with this flat space story with the formula for this bootstrap time delay, and it has actually the following form. I will write it in a form which is familiar from other experiment or other type of constraints which people consider. which is a problem of energy correlators. People sometimes impose this kind of causality in a setup with energy correlators. Actually, the symmetries of the problem are the same. And if you compute this time time advance in an abstract theory with given 3-point amplitudes, you will get exactly the same formulas as the story with energy correlators. But this T2 and T4 now depend on the parameter, on this impact parameter. And importantly, they have this 1 over b squares, which I discussed here. Plus, they have 1 over say, b to the 4. Haven't discussed it, but there are several structures in the 3-point amplitude. But what is important is that in this energy correlator story or in this formula, this has to be positive. We have now new parameter, which is the impact parameter. And this parameter, if we assume that we have, you know, if we start say, if we have this 3-point amplitude such that it becomes negative, we have to conclude that at this critical impact parameters, you have some new particles to kick in. So in this way, say in the context of ADS CFT, if this B, well, I will talk about it about ADS CFT separately. But the important thing is that if we take impact parameter to be very large, we don't get any constraints. As soon as we're coming closer and start probing this new length scales, these other 3-point amplitudes lead to causality violation, and we have to conclude that theories with these 3-point amplitudes, which are non-zero, should have new degrees of freedom on this scale. So that's a conclusion of the flat space story. Now, have any questions? Yeah. Yeah. So far, it was flat space.
Yeah.
So I would like to define it, and now I'd like to talk about CFT next part. And if there are no questions about flat space, I'll switch to.
Yeah. I'm remembering, I think the shockwave will be one of these things that's going to do an infinite production of test strings.
Of test string? Okay, so instead.
So, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
More new degrees of freedom, but surely wouldn't expect this to be reliable.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. So that's exactly what you can play this game in string theory, and this was studied a lot again by Veneziano and collaborators and many people. And the physics of what happens in string theory is quite rich. There are several regimes. There is a diffractive regime, an elastic regime, regime where you can trust these kind of things. And what happens in string theory, I think here what I'm saying is very pessimistic. I'm saying that I postpone particles to this scale B being of order 1 over m. And in string theory, the scale where it gets really corrected is much it's earlier. It's roughly alpha prime times log s alpha prime. So there is enhancement by the log, which comes from the fact that you have, when in string theory, you have these new particles, which are exchanged, and they're all possible spins, high spins. And each amplitude of high spin, it has this s to the j factor, which is e to the j log s. And so the effective mass or impact parameter is reduced by log of s. And indeed, much earlier, all this breaks down in string theory. Yes. So, and it exactly agrees with saying that something should happen before this. That's the idea, yeah. Now, let me play the same game in ADS CFT. It's almost identical and matches nicely to what was done in the past. So, As I said, that what we are doing in string theory is we're imagining considering some 4-point function, and say we have this shock wave, and we send a graviton which goes from boundary to the boundary, and we would like to see that it lands inside the light cone. Now, first of all, let me play this quickly, this shock wave game, and. The interesting thing, that if you consider shockwave in ADS, it has all the nice properties of shockwaves in flat space. Namely, you have some, let me call it rho. So here I choose some particular coordinates. for the ADS. But the idea is exactly the same. If you have a, if you start with the ADS, and you add some highly boosted particles, if you take a black hole and boost it, you get this shockwave solution. And it's also, again, importantly, it's solution in any theory of gravity. You can add any corrections you want. It's still an exact exact solution. Now, this the effects which are happening in ADS are exactly the same. But the difference is that the transverse plane, the plane if you set u to 0, is not Euclidean space-time anymore, but it's a hyperbolic space. So what happens is that from e d minus 2, we went to h d minus 2. Other than that, we have now no problem in d equal 4. In ADS, d equal 4 is perfect. All these logs do not lead to any trouble. And the causal structure is well defined. And then if you compute the propagation of a graviton first in a theory which admits second order equations of motion, it will have exactly this type. But now this function, this function T2 and T4 will depend on this coordinate rho, which measures how close you are to the boundary of ADS. And let me just draw that. If I have this hyperbolic space, and in the center I have rho equal to 0, and on the boundary I have rho equal to 1. So we have this T2 being this function T2 and T4 being proportional to this function of omega. And this function, this omega function, it has the following properties. Let me say write it explicitly for the case of ADS5. It's very simple. Now, what do we have?
What is the cosmological constant?
Oh, it's 1. Yeah, well, it's, I'm meeting many things like this. And so this, there are two limits here, of course. And one is that if we consider limit rho going to 0, in this case, the impact parameter is much smaller than the radius of ADS, and we, this function, it just reduces to the function, to the shockwave in flat space. And if you take rho equal to 1, well, it's, what happens is that this shockwave, it reduces to the shockwave which was considered in the past in the context of causality violation, say, for example, by Diego Hoffman. So what happened is that let me maybe do it in a simple example. Let me consider the propagation of the. It's just a bit simpler. If I consider as a probe particle, say a photon, the Maxwell equation get corrected. Have Riemann tensor times F here. And if you compute this time delay, there is only one structure. And it's it is identical to the structure which appears in the story of energy correlators. And I want to consider this simple because, well, that you get the constraint of the following type. So again, where this T2, as I just explained, it has two limits, and it interpolates between Hoffman-Maldacena bounds. So the thing is that if you run this experiment and impose this causality for rho goes to 1, you just reproduce the bounds that were known before. But if you take the limit rho goes to 0, you reduce to flat space. flat space limit. And the result is that rough result is the following that we get. I just decided to write it in the variables that some people may like. That in the four-dimensional CFTs, we have this A and C parameters. And the Hofmann-Maldacena constraints tell us that, say, C minus A minus C. Let me consider, it doesn't mean it's completely not relevant, but consider N equal 1 superconformal field theory. It doesn't change anything. I don't remember how it changes. 3 halves and minus 1 half, or something like this. Correct me if I wrong. So whatever number these numbers are, these are Hofmann-Maldacena bounds. Now, what happens if you go to this flat space limit is that this C minus A over C, it's get multiplied by a gap square. And this comes simply that we have 1 over B square term, and I relate B to the 1 over gap. So this suggests that this bounds become something like this. And that's why we see is as the gap becomes very large, C minus A becoming very small. And the same true in gravitational theory. If you apply this bound, you go from Hofmann-Maldacena bounds to flat space bounds, which are related to the gap.
How do you define the gap?
Okay, so of course, this is a picture in a sense. It's not a theorem. So of course it would be nice to prove a theorem. And as I said, I think that there are several different mechanisms which I will be happy to discuss maybe after the talk or during the questions. How this thing can get fixed? And if you assume, say for example, if you have a gap and you have millions of operators there. With some energy density, this answer will depend on this. So what I'm doing is something very elementary, and if you want to prove a theorem, I think one should do better. And in particular, for example, you ask what is the intrinsic definition of this time delay in a CFT, and I think that what happens is that people, of course, analyzed this iconal approximation in CFT, and what happens if we have a four-point function, and we evolve it in time, you know, if we do the OPE, then things that propagate have I delta tau, say, and if you have some time delay, you can associate it with a anomalous dimension. So that time delay was computed in a EDS CFT in the iconal limit, and it was shown that this time delay is related to anomalous dimension of double trace operators. So if you say take operators like this, of this type, and define anomalous dimensions being N and S, then there are many, many different regimes which people consider here. But roughly what happens is that this energy in the bulk, is something like N times N plus S, while the impact parameter of the scattering is something like this. So what happens is that if you take, say, very small number of boxes, you're probing large impact parameters. If you start increasing number of boxes to keep them finite, you start probing small number of impact parameters. You start fixing fixed impact parameters. So this computation was done by Penedones, Cost, and blah, blah, blah in gravitational theories. But I think what happens is that this computation in a gap theories, it should be possible to derive it through bootstrap. So if we consider it should be possible to derive from the crossing equation that this gamma in the limit where beta is very large, but fixed. We are just reproducing graviton exchange in the bulk, and the result of Benedonis for the time delay et al. Is valid in this case, and again, it's fixed in terms of two-point function. Now?
Why do you call this gamma obeys an inequality?
Sorry?
You simply impose that in this language that gamma obeys some inequality.
Yes, yes.
But in the safety.
Yeah, I agree. That's if you have some abstract safety, I think this gravitational computation, it suggests they have to be completely new conditions, which the OPE should encode causality of the CFT. And in this setup, it's very clear that if you use bulk, that the positivity of these gammas, they're related to causality in the bulk. So there should be, well, I don't know how to do it. It's an open question. I think that the whole question is how to do it from the bootstrap is completely open. But what?
Negative for all n and s.
For this two?
Gamma.
Well, first of all, everything I said is for n over s being fixed, but being small compared to the gap. Because as soon as you start approaching the gap, we're entering Regi limit. It's completely complicated. It probes all kind of stuff about the theory. But what I'm saying is that. People in the past, they analyzed bootstrap equation in the limit, say, of large spin and small n. So people fixed it here. For very large spin and very small n, people were able to find some anomalous dimensions, non-perturbative. But I think what the physics in the bulk, and it was related to cluster decomposition in the bulk. But I think what cluster decomposition in the bulk suggests that there is some line here which is defined by the gap. It should be related to the gap in the CFT. So that if you in this region, you should be able to solve crossing equation just using the same graviton. And it should be completely fixed. Moreover, I think the whole juice, the whole constraints from the whole. All constraints that I used today were related to the fact that the graviton has spin. Because all this violation of causality in higher derivative theories of gravity were due to the fact that graviton has a spin. For scalar things, everything is trivial. So I think what this suggests is the much more interesting is to consider something like this. And if you want to prove something about A minus C, at least using this physical picture, it should be related to some positivity conditions for this type of double trace operators. So that's a story in ADS, and let me maybe conclude, which is that what I tried to argue for you that if we have weakly coupled gravitational theories in flat space, there is this three-point amplitudes related to the new degrees of freedom, some three-point amplitudes, which was three-point amplitudes of graviton with this funny polarization, which are not generated by GR. And then you can say that, yes, it's what are the precise formulas? But precise formulas, they depend, say, for example, if you consider quantum electrodynamics and you write effective action for the photons, it receives one loop correction in the gravitational field, which many people will claim for a while is violates causality. So you just write a photon, effective action for the photon in a non-trivial gravitational background, and you get exactly these three-point functions, which seem to violate causality. But then you see that they violate causality exactly where you expect, which is the scale is 1 over m of electron. So the pairs of electron and positron fix this problem. Now in string theory, as you mentioned, it's also what happens is the same. But in string theory, the problem is fixed quantum mechanically. And in string theory, it's fixed classically. We don't have any loops. We just add a bunch of Regi particles, and it's fixed. So it's the same story that happens in ADS, where we have TTT related to 1 over gap Well, I think it's, well, and of course, the natural question to ask is what is happening in the Sitter space, whereas the analogous thing, which is sensitive to the same kind of physical information, is tensor mode non-Gaussianities, and what does it mean? What does it mean for this three-point function to respect causality? And how it is related to new degrees of freedom in the Sitter space? I think it's an exciting open questions, which I don't have anything to say about today. But I think it's clear that if you look at the way this tensor mode is computed, it's exactly sensitive to the same three-point amplitude. So in a sense, if you believe that was the same action, if you detect this three-point function on Gaussianities with polarizations which are not generated by GR, and then you apply this argument, say, today in flat space, you'll see that there has to be new degrees of freedom there. So, and I think it's a very interesting, well, at least to me to understand better, what does the other say? For example, we saw that usually three-point amplitudes are they're zero and non-physical, but if you go to impact parameter space, they just exactly they appear there. And if there are any other quantities and physical processes, I don't know, in astrophysics, where the rate of gravitational waves probes the structure of this three-point amplitudes, and what are the experimental ways to probe this three-point amplitudes, because they seem to be very sensitive to the structure of the spectrum at the string scale. And of course, the whole story in ADS 50, in the case of flat space, there was a story where we use the bootstrap. We bootstrap four-point amplitudes using three-point amplitudes. Now, when I was talking about ADS, I just invoked the shockwave picture. And it would be very nice to completely to put this ADS 50 story on shell and to reformulate this causality things in ADS in terms of to derive it from the bootstrap equation. But this is a completely open question. I don't know yet how to do it. Thanks.
Okay, if there are no questions, let's thank Sasha again.